the U.S. Supreme Court released some long-awaited opinions yesterday, including rulings on a citizenship question on the census, gerrymandering, and a Wisconsin case about drawing blood from a drunk driver.
Kimmy King is with us to discuss the decisions released yesterday. She's a professor of political science at the University of North Texas. Kimmy, it's great to have you back on with us on Central Time.
Always good to be back on public radio.
So one of the most anticipated decisions addressed whether the Trump administration could include a question on the upcoming 2020 census asking whether a person responding to the survey is a U.S. citizen. In a 5-4 decision, the court ruled that it could not be added for the first time in well over about 60 years. What did we hear from the majority here?
So what's the most interesting about the case and has been the most interesting this term has been the role of Chief Justice John Roberts, because Roberts was critical in that case for providing the fifth vote and the opinion, which sets out the concerns regarding the Trump administration's attempt to place the census question on the upcoming census. And in essence, what the court agreed was they decided not to decide. And that is, they kicked this down the road, saying that there had been insufficient evidence about the agency's decision-making process. And so that's what Roberts wanted to clarify. He was not saying that the Secretary of Commerce could not put a census question on. In fact, if you look back in time, we have had a variation of a census question on there. But since 1950, there has been real reluctance to do it on the broader census survey. And so his concern was that the agency and the Secretary of Commerce, Wilbur Ross, and his attempts to put the census question on there had not provided sufficient justification for doing so. And so that's why it won't be on this census unless they can get that moving quickly.
Do you think that we could see some movement on that, or is this sort of dead in the water currently?
Well, the thing that's difficult is that I don't know how closely folks were following this, but there were documents that have appeared regarding attempts at altering the democratic governance process, and they have been linked clearly to that decision. So it makes it very difficult for the administration to come forward. Additionally, the administration has said that they absolutely had to have a decision out of the court because they need to start printing up and get moving on the questionnaire not later than June. And as you can see, it's tick-tock, tick-tock, time is running out.
This decision in no way, shape, or form was unanimous, even though Justice Roberts sided with the majority here. There were still four more justices that were in the minority and dissented. What was their argument here?
Well, their argument, and you can see that Roberts isn't saying, I'm disagreeing with you on this, in his majority opinion. The minority is concerned that this is something that is left within the domain of the executive, and the executive has this authority, and it's a legitimate question that can be placed and has been placed on the census in the past. They were not as concerned about the sufficiency of the evidence or the motives that might have gone into placing the census question on there. And that really is where the hard line comes between the two.
As you mentioned, it's sort of tick-tock, tick-tock for the Trump administration. President Trump has said that he is looking into ways to get the census, the citizen question on the census. Is there a legal action the administration can take, or where does this stand?
So it's not clear, you know, as you said before, that it's not dead in the water this go-round. What the administration will need to do is to lay the groundwork for why they want to put it on there. And most importantly, the pivotal issue that they had argued was they needed to be able to protect voting rights. But they have that, you know, having this question on there would make clear the protection of those who are eligible for voting. Unfortunately, they don't have any documentation to support that. So they need to lay a groundwork for what that is. And then they also have to overcome dealing with emails and memos and other communications, which seem to indicate that it was trying to shore up political power. I think in the interim, one of the other things, the real reason why it's dead in the water, is that it's incredibly problematic for your your large states, especially those that have large immigrant populations. Texas, my state, has said, oh, that's okay, undercount our people. We're okay with that, but other states not so much. The implication of the census has an impact on billions of dollars over the course of the next decade that your state will receive. It has implications for your representation in the U.S. Congress. And most importantly, as we head into 2020, it has implications for the role you will play in the Electoral College and the selection of the president. And so I think it's really that as people start to digest this and the political impact that adding a census question would have, that will be what ultimately drives the debate as they move forward. And the ability to win that argument is what matters.
We're talking to Kimmy King right now. She's a professor of political science at the University of North Texas. And we're talking about three cases that the U.S. Supreme Court issued rulings on yesterday. Sticking in the political realm, let's talk about partisan gerrymandering. It's been the subject of two different lawsuits that have made it to the Supreme Court. One is from North Carolina. The other is from Maryland. Can you really quickly tell us about those cases?
So here, once again, Roberts is showing his swing voter colors, and he is going to align this time with the four conservatives. And really, this case is the much more important case regarding gerrymandering. And I think it's also very important to point out that the court was being an equal opportunity employer for slapping back both Democrats and Republicans, because in the Maryland case, you had Maryland Democrats who were targeting Republicans, and in the North Carolina case, you had North Carolina Republicans targeting Democrats. We have a long history and standards clearly provided for how you are to evaluate racial gerrymandering, and racial gerrymandering is prohibited. But what the court has struggled with is coming up with a clear standard for partisan gerrymandering. That is, it's not because of the color of your skin, it's because of your party. Well, when you're looking at modern voting phenomenon, you can clearly see that higher numbers of minorities vote for Democrats and that Republicans can reliably count on their Anglo counterparts in elections. So the question then becomes, is that racial gerrymandering? Who should decide this? Do the standards from racial gerrymandering automatically apply to partisan gerrymandering? Is there really anything, I think in some ways, wrong about partisan gerrymandering? Because then it is inside the parties and it was left to the state legislatures under the Constitution. The question is, is that in some ways pretextual? You are using partisanship as a pretext for why you're doing what you're doing. And so it's really just kind of racism hiding behind the party, right? That's the argument. And so what Robert said is, we're not going to have any of it. You know what? The federal courts should not be involved in this. The federal courts should stay out. This is a political question. Which, when most people hear political question, you think, oh, every question before the Supreme Court is a political question. But when the Supreme Court says political question, they mean a question reserved to another branch of government. And so what Roberts did was to say, this is a political question. The federal court should stay in their lane. We are going to push it back to the states. They need to come up with standards regarding partisan gerrymandering. Indeed, a number of states have already started doing that because of all the issues and the litigation costs associated with gerrymandering cases. They were proactive, and Robert said, we're going to leave it there, and we're going to stay over here. So in that sense, it is a win for conservative Republicans. Just understand that in the case itself, it absolutely targeted both Democrats and Republicans.
In this vein still, Justice Elena Kagan was one of the authors of the dissent. It was pretty blistering. And she said democracy is basically at stake, unless I'm mistaking what she wrote.
know. In fact, in what, you know, I would call a fierce dissent, she accused the Roberts majority of being anti-democratic and said that, quote, the court was abandoning the court's duty to declare law, that the practices challenged in these cases imperil our system of government, and nothing is more important than free and fair elections. No, she was blistering in her attack. And there is real concern about what the impact will be if we just kind of say, okay, we'll let the, you know, we'll just let the states do whatever they want to, because that didn't work out so well for us during Jim Crow era and in the early era of the Voting Rights Revolution. In fact, we can trace the court's entry into voting rights to a decision of Baker versus Carr in the early 1960s, where they said, sorry, gerrymandering is not a political question. It is very appropriate for the federal courts to decide. So that's why everybody kind of went, wow, that was quite a decision.
Kimmy, we have about a minute and a half left. There was a case that did come from Wisconsin. This was about whether or not police can draw blood to test for intoxication if the person is passed out and can't give consent. What constitutional element did this case hinge on?
So it really is an issue regarding the exceptions to the warrant requirement. Part of why everyone is up in arms about the court reversing its precedent is that in McNeely versus Missouri, in a 2013 case, the court said, hey, modern technology has made it possible to get warrants quickly by the side of the road. There's no reason why you can't do that. In your Wisconsin case, it's because Wisconsin has an implied consent law, and that's what Wisconsin had argued all the way up. Look, when you get your license, you have impliedly consent to everything we need to do to you if there's a problem on the side of the road. And so they had asserted that in the lower court arguments. The court decided the case not based on implied consent, but based on exigent circumstances. And they said, look, if you're passed out from a DUI, then we can take your blood without a warrant. In the McNeely case, they said, no, you've got to get a warrant. But that person was awake and lucid. In your case, the person was passed out. Court says exigent circumstances apply. And so in many ways, what you're going to see is future law enforcement has been sent a signal that, look, just justify a warrantless search for exigent circumstances and you're going to be okay. Supreme Court said so in the Mitchell case.
Kimmy, that's all the time we have left for this conversation today. Thank you so much for joining us.
As always.
Kimmy King is a professor of political science at the University of North Texas, and she was with us to talk about U.S. Supreme Court decisions that were handed down yesterday.